First of all, can you tell me what you've been up to over the past couple of years?
We finished touring. We took a short break. We started writing some songs. We did some spring cleaning, some house cleaning, which is to be expected anytime a little bit of dust builds up once you start neglecting your duties. What I'm trying to say is we got rid of our guitarist. It took us a while rehearsing to find a new one. We finally opted for a fairly easy choice, someone I'd played with before, a guy named Trey. He's real easy to write with. We wrote some pretty good songs with him. We recorded them. It took about 8 weeks, 2 months, something like that. Once we finished that up, Trey made it very apparent that he was shuffling his feet around about the tour. That's one thing you can't shuffle your feet around about. That's a certainty in what we do. A terrible certainty, but a certainty nonetheless. So he left. And it was a good time for him to leave because if it would have been in the middle of tour, it would have been disastrous. It would have been ugly. So now we are playing with another guitar player who's a friend of ours who's actually toured with us before. Used to work for the band, so he's in for the long haul. And we trust him. His name is Dean.
This new album's called King for a Day, Fool for a Lifetime. Where did that title come from?
The album title was just kind of a creation of our own. It kind of works well with the cover of the record. It kind of sums up, I think, everybody's life. Like Andy Warhol said, or even Sigmund Freud, I think, said, all men are heroes in their dreams or in dreams. Which implies that, yeah, you know, everyone is king for a day, but ultimately everyone is a fool for a lifetime. It's kind of comfortable to think that you're one of the fools, isn't it?
In the wake of The Real Thing and Angel Dust, did you feel you're under a lot of pressure to make this one a commercial success?
I don't think we feel pressure, because I think Angel Dust was in a way of kind of fighting back pressure. I think that Angel Dust was where, psychologically, we decided pressure wasn't going to govern how we ran our band. The only pressure that we would have is the pressure we gave ourselves. We definitely always have pressure with every record as far as to do something interesting that we feel satisfied with, and that could be frustrating. Like if you have an arrangement where things, it just isn't flowing right, or things just don't work out. As far as like commercial success and stuff like that, obviously we do this for a living, but it's just one of those things that so far we've been satisfied with what we've done, like the product that we've done, that things have worked out on their own. So since it works like that for us, no point pushing the point.
I think it's best for a band like us to not think about the pressures and try to ignore them as much as possible. I think we're best just kind of going on our own whims and recording and creating as best we know how without anything else involved. We seem to go into each recording process that way, and each way it's kind of worked. Each recording, I think, pretty much sums up the time at which we were at when we recorded then. And to keep it as untainted as possible is always beneficial.
So, if Angel Dust was you fighting back against the pop success of The Real Thing, do you think King for a Day falls somewhere between the two?
The Real Thing was a record that we did where nobody cared who we were. We just kind of did it, and it became successful. That was interesting. At the same time, we played it so much and it took so long to get going that I think that we got tired of that album. And to me, when I look back on it, I personally hear a lot of cliches on that album that kind of don't sit right with me. Also, the vibe that came with that period of time was the band was becoming typecast into something I think we probably weren't comfortable with. And that was coupled with success. So the implication was that if we continued along that path, you know, things would go really well. I think we fought against that. And we did Angel Dust, but at the same time, we made a good record that was different, but worked. So that gave us the confidence to think that we could do whatever we wanted. Really, the difference between King for a Day and Angel Dust is that we're bouncing off the aesthetic ideas of Angel Dust, which were kind of dense, kind of dark, and thick, and wanted to try something simple, something that was really light on its feet. And we had a new guitar player, and we were really excited about that, because it would be probably the first time we could really write songs with a guitar player, or at least bounce ideas off each other and have some common ground. So it's probably a little more guitar heavy because, we were really into playing with a new guitar player.
How do you actually go about writing and recording an album?
The only thing that we try and do is have most of the work finished before we go into the studio, just avoid a lot of like costly mistakes and experimentation, which isn't to say that we're closed to that, but I think we like to be prepared when we go into the studio. So when the meter starts running, you know, we kind of know which direction we're going. But I think it's best when we record, we try and keep open minds and try and be as receptive as we can to each other.
Writing an album, there really, we try not to keep a set process because we like to think, keep things interesting for us. And we like to maintain the illusion that we're learning all the time. And just trying different ways of writing songs is a good way to do it. It keeps things fun. Recording, we try to record live in the same room generally.
Every song is pretty different. And I think maybe that's why songs are coming from different angles, you know. Either one person can have a little idea and foster it and keep it pristine, or most of the time what happens is someone, an individual, get an idea and then it just gets destroyed and raped and played with and manipulated a lot. And sometimes it doesn't even resemble what it once was. But I think the best songs turn out that way. Songs that have had a lifespan, that have been around.
Do you have your own favorite songs on this album?
You know, it's I always say it, and me again, I'm the straight man in the band, and so I kind of tell this, you know, I love this stuff and I mean it and it's honest. But you know, sometimes I get a bunch of shit for being, you know, sort of like wearing my heart on my sleeve. But these songs are like my kids. I love them all. I'm real proud of the fact of like Evidence, which is a smooth song, and I think if you look back, there's other songs throughout the history of this band. New Beginnings and Song was like that. Edge of the World, to me, this Falling to Pieces, to me, this song is what we've been trying to do for a long time. It's even smoother and it's very convincing. It wasn't sort of just down to the keyboards to play a nice melody and the guitar's going to be thundering off, but quietly. You know, so it just sort of, it was, we had better tools. We had, you know, more efficient ways of dealing with it. So I really like Evidence. I really like King for a Day, Last to Know. I like them all. You know, I do.
I think that we accomplished what we wanted to do in each song. So it's kind of hard to really pick one over another. And they're totally different from each other. So it's really hard to even have a standard to judge them.
So where do Faith No More's influences come from?
I think we all bring in different things, but I think more than anything, we all bring different things together. Like, not like Billy is this type of person, I'm this type of person, Mike is that type of person, but more like I'm a lot of different types of people. Billy's a lot of different types of people. Mike's a lot of different types of people. Everyone has different influences, like a lot of different extreme abstract influences. I don't think everyone in the band plays a distinct role. I think everyone plays a really schizophrenic role. That's how we kind of work.
I think there's something pretty schizophrenic about your on-stage, off-stage personalities as well. How do you deal with that alter ego when you're playing live?
Try to be as unaware of it as I can. I think it's better, yeah. Just up there is the romper room. Up there, anything can happen, and you probably won't have to pay for it. So I think that's an hour and a half of taking advantage of a situation. It's a nice outlet. It's a nice outlet. Yeah, it's a nice outlet. Especially after a day of maybe waiting around or... It's nice. I mean, when we travel, it's kind of like a cocoon, and that's one way out, you know? And you can, you know, you don't have to talk to anybody.
Now the album's released and out of your hands, are you finding it easy to let it go?
Now that the album's done, it's done. I'm really thinking ahead. I mean, we know we have to tour this record. We're going to tour it for about a year and a half, and that's just the fact of life. We'll probably start writing on the road for the next record. I think that it's like the way we write music is the way someone build a cabinet. You know, once the cabinet's built, you use the cabinet, and that's basically what this album is.